helping to make our community a better place. This is the WOKV Ask the Experts Weekend, discussing the things that matter most to you. Have a question? Have it answered by our local experts. Call 340-1045. That's 340-1045. Now, the conversation with Dr. Ali Kazrayan on News 104.5 WOKV.
Good evening, Jacksonville, and happy Saturday. I'm Danielle Lee, and welcome to The Conversation with Dr. Ali Kazrayan. As always, you too can join the conversation. Give us a call, 340-1045. Dr. Ali, how are you today?
I am good. I am good. I am happy to be here in studio with all of you. Bittersweet topic today,
yes.
But I think it's a very important topic today. In light of recent events, we talk about depression a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, we talk about a lot of reasons to pay mind to depression. One of the things that's a very important thing to think about is depression is one of the top 10 causes of death in the United States, and one of three causes that actually is on the rise currently. And the CDC recently released a study showing that between 1999 and 2016, U.S. suicide rate increased by 25%. Broken down a bit further, in women, it increased more so than in men, which is a very interesting finding, being that historically, as even currently, suicide rates in men are about 3 to 5 times higher in men than they are in women. However, with a 50% increase in suicides among women nationally compared to a 21% increase in suicides among men in that same time period, could there be a situation where we're beginning to see those differences and trends equalizing over time if these increased tendencies continue? Obviously, in the media over the past few weeks, we've been deeply saddened by the very public celebrity suicides of Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain, people that are very near and dear to a lot of people's hearts. Anthony Bourdain really opened the world to a lot of people and inspired a lot of people. I know a lot of people personally that he inspired a lot of travel and exploration and opening their minds to new things. So they're very deeply saddened by his passing. But it opens up a conversation for us to be mindful of the power of depression, of pushing someone to a point where they can make a decision where the only option they see is taking their own life. So today we hope that with our illustrious panel, we can talk about this in a way that can allow us hope and ways of looking at depression and the feelings associated with it in a way that we can come off the other side with help, people you can talk to, ways of reaching out to people you love, people that you care about, yourself, and knowing how to have those conversations if you're worried about someone that's dear to you so that we can hopefully reverse the trends of these new statistics. In studio with me discussing this topic is Dr. Tracy Alloway, who is a professor of psychology at UNF, an author, expert in many things, including essentially the adolescent mind and the implications of the worlds around us on that. We talk about social media with her in the past. We've talked about many different things, and we'll talk about how those things could potentially impact the mind of the young as they mature and the implications of things like what happened in the past week, studies like this, access to that information in social media to someone who may be on the fence at a young age. Calling in by phone is Dr. Marcus De Carvalho, a psychiatrist who is well-versed in many, many things that we talk about all the time, opioid addiction, recovery, depression. All of those things are things we talk about and unfortunately go hand in hand when someone is in a situation where they're considering taking their life. What we're going to do today is hopefully talk about how people get to that point and things we can do to potentially get out of that moment without taking one's life. I know this is a deeply sensitive topic. If anyone wants to call in and talk, please let us know. One number that I want everyone to be aware of, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 1-800-273-8255. anyone thinking about taking their life, if you're feeling down, if there's anything going on, talk to your doctor, talk to someone. That could be the most important conversation that you have. If you're worried about someone you care about, talk to them, make those calls. And today we'll have those discussions. So everyone, thank you for being in studio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Dr. DeCarvello, so as a psychiatrist, looking at these statistics, looking at the way that depression usually manifests, and the fact that now, wonderfully, we are getting more and more attention as the years progress in terms of the importance of mental health as a disease and the importance of mental health as a point of discussion, as opposed to something that in the past no one ever spoke about. How do we move from that to a point where now in the media we see things like we saw last week, Kate Spade, Anthony Bourdain, and now this study coming in there, and how people interpret this in both the positive and negative, and the fact that we don't really know why this is happening. Everyone has theories. Could it be societal, mental health? You know, one interesting statistic is that only 54% of the people that commit suicide actually have a diagnosis of mental health associated with this. And so it only takes one time for someone to be successful. So when you look at the what happened in the past couple weeks and this new study released by the CDC, what are your thoughts?
Well, first, thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm just really grateful to be able to share some of the knowledge and really be there for our community and provide resources for them. So thank you for having me. When I see this type of thing and, you know, the CDC releases this data, as a psychiatrist, suicide is not uncommon. I mean, this is what we are trained to tease out, to diagnose, and to treat our patients with. So I am not surprised that this information is coming out. I'm very grateful that it actually is. And as far as somebody not having a mental health diagnosis committing suicide, that is not uncommon either. People, when they generally end their lives, normally it's an impulsive act. Many of my patients I see over time, and they struggle with suicidal thoughts for 20, 30 years. And suicidal thinking versus, you know, intent and a plan to actually really end your life, that's a big jump. And normally what we see is we see people end their lives impulsively, no sign, no nothing. There may have been some substance abuse, underlying substance abuse, that they've been using as a coping mechanism, or they may have very poor coping mechanisms. They may have had in their home access to firearms or access to drugs or something that could actually end their lives quickly, and some catastrophic event happens in their lives. They have no outlet. They don't have the ability to cope or navigate through it, and they just jump to that, and they end their lives. The majority of people that actually survive suicide attempts when interviewed, and you can look up the data, are actually grateful they've survived, because it's a matter of time that will pass, that they get through that moment in life that they actually thought about killing themselves. And once they get through that and see that it's just time that can actually help them, they're grateful they didn't end their lives. So I'm not surprised that that data came out, but I'm grateful, in one, that if you have a friend or a loved one that you know is struggling with something in their lives, it could be their finances, it could be a divorce, it could be an illness, it could be a situation with their children, just go to them. Be there for them. There's nothing wrong with asking somebody, look, this may sound awkward, and you may not even be thinking this, but I know you're going through a lot. Are you ever having any thoughts of ending your life, or as that being a way out? Because anything you tell me is not going to scare me, frazzle me, freak me out, but I just want to be there for you. And if that person is actually contemplating that, they are going to be grateful, because that is a rescue attempt. That will allow them to get out of that. The majority of people that are thinking about ending their lives, they just need somebody to come in and ask that question. You know, often in our communities, we think, well, if I say that, if I do that, I'm going to plant a seed in their mind, and then they're going to end their lives because I said that. That is not true, and there's no data to support that, actually. The data actually supports that if you question somebody, you know, and it could be awkward, it could be out of nowhere, and just say something as, are you having suicidal thoughts? That will actually save their lives.
Which is
as
important.
As far as Anthony Bourdain and Kate Spade, you know, it was, you know, revealed that she did have an underlying mental health issue. And Anthony Bourdain, he looked like he was at the top of his career. He looked like things were going great. But nobody really knows what was going on in his life. He did have a history of substance abuse. And during that time, you know, life allows us to develop coping skills. It allows us to step into our lives and kind of deal with the stresses of our lives. Nobody really knows what he was facing. And maybe impulsively, it was just too much for him. And ending his life was just made sense to him at that moment. Who knows who was actually in his life, who his close friends are, who he believed that he could trust. And so often, you know, when we have patients that we talk to, one of the first things we want to know is, what is their social support? Who's in their lives? Who do they turn to? Do they have loved ones? Or have they burned all their bridges and they have no one now? So these are some of the things that we try to tease out and screen.
So Dr. Alloway, one question I have in follow-up with that. So, you know, in moments where an act of suicide or an attempt may be a very, very spontaneous response to something, like we just discussed, and in response to the things that are out there now, someone passed away by suicide. We have multiple episodes that have been shown here in the past few weeks. It's all over the news. It's all over social media. We've discussed about with the younger generation now, a lot of their discussions, a lot of their education in terms of conversation between each other is now in text, mm-hmm. It's in email, it's in conversations that don't have any kind of verbal cues. Mm-hmm. So one question is, how are young people who see this information that may be feeling down and how their impression of this information is taken in, going to respond to this if they're on the fence of thinking about doing something like this? And then secondarily, how is someone going to know if one of their friends needs help if they can't recognize those social cues? I was actually reading an article recently where it talked about youth and adolescents begin to use more nonverbal communication, they're beginning to not be able to identify nonverbal communication, such as the way we look at each other, the facial expressions, things of that nature, which are very important to our impression of how we talk, how we act, and those subtle things that make human-to-human communication very elegant. Mm-hmm. So how do we pay mind to those things in a situation where everyone's sitting there and glued to a text and they may not learn those nonverbal communication skills, which is very similar to autistic children?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a fascinating question. Just to follow up with the study that I had done, I looked at young adults, just the age group you're talking about, between 18 and 22. And we were looking from a cognitive perspective, what were some of the risk factors for actually, you know, going through and attempting a suicidal attempt. We looked at things like depression, like we've been talking about, is one of the risk factors. And we know with adolescents, you mentioned that previous psychiatric diagnoses are maybe about, you know, slightly over 50% or so in adults. In adolescents, it's much higher. We're looking at a rate of as high as 90%. So they're obviously in a very vulnerable mental and cognitive stage. It's a time of growing for them. So we looked at depression. We looked at another coping mechanism, as Dr. Marcus was mentioning, this idea of rumination. When an event happens, how often do you fixate and it's hard for you to kind of get away from that? So that this goes along to the theme or the idea where you're saying, I just can't stop replaying it in my mind, or I don't know why that conversation, that breakup is just going again and again, like on a loop. This is the concept of rumination. And we know this is also linked to depression. And the third thing that I was looking at was this idea of self-critical attitudes. And we used actually something that the medical field tends to use. It's called a classification and regression tree, where we had all of these different factors and we could say, you know, you've got all these risk factors, narrow it down for us statistically and show us which one of these is going to ultimately predict whether someone will make a suicidal attempt or not. And we found it boiled down to one thing, and that was a self-critical attitude. Specifically, did that individual feel like they were unworthy of love? And that right there was the biggest predictor of telling us whether someone would be more likely to attempt suicide, that they felt as an individual that they were just not worthy of being loved. And I think for me, that was a real eye-opener as a psychologist and even as a researcher, just to see that we focus a lot on depression, and those they're clear symptoms. You've got the apathy, the anhedonia, you know, the lack of motivation, and those may be easy to spot. But if someone feels unworthy of love, are we able to spot that in our peer group, our social group? And again, these were young adults, and I think that was a great first step to be having that awareness that when you talk to your friend, you know, reinforce that. Say to them, hey, you're valued today. You're important to me today. I'm grateful that we're having this conversation. I'm grateful that we're having coffee right now. And kind of linking in on that, there was another study looking at parenting and children, 12 and 14, and they found along those lines that one of the biggest links to a 12 to 14-year-old peer that would be likely to link to suicidal attempts is the parents not communicating love or appreciation or praise to their child. And that 12 to 14 age seemed to be especially critical, where they were more likely to consider suicide, had these suicidal ideations, had these suicidal thoughts, because their parents were not expressing praise or appreciation. So I think that, you know, kind of feeds into this idea of feeling unworthy or unloved.
It's important. You know, all, you know, life is sometimes can be boiled down to very simple things. We all want to be appreciated. We want to be loved, and we want to feel valued. Mm-hmm. And when those things are tough to find or tough to see, it may be a difficult time to crawl out of a situation when you are already feeling down. Mm-hmm. And as this hour progresses, we're going to talk about ways to potentially identify that, ways to be mindful of that. And the mindfulness of this is something that is very, very important because, like we talk about, this is a very, very serious problem in terms of depression and the possibility of all the factors that could play into heightening depression and the possibility of leading to a suicidal attempt, which unfortunately in situations that there's access to ways that are going to be more fatal than not, we find that the rates of suicide are going up at alarming rates. So hopefully we can find a way to reverse that trend before it kind of continues to move in the directions that are, you know, a terrifying direction to go.
Right. And then we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with more of the conversation here on News 104.5 WOKV. All right. And we are back with the conversation, as always. We only have a few minutes left in this segment, but it's an important topic. So let's get right back to it.
So welcome to the conversation. Today, we're talking about depression and suicide. The CDC recently released new statistics showing that in the United States between 1999 and 2016, the rate of suicide in the United States increased by almost 25%. And so obviously, one of the risk factors for suicide is depression and mental illness, but not always. And we've been discussing both of those possibilities over the last segment. This segment with our guest, Dr. Tracy Alloway, professor of psychology and author at, I guess, professor of psychology at UNF and author, Dr. Marcus DiCarvalho, a psychiatrist here in Jacksonville with specialty in addiction and the implications of that, which include depression. And again, unfortunately, suicide is something that unfortunately can be a challenge when people are feeling down and can potentially, like we spoke about in the last segment, self-medicate with substance abuse. So one question I have, Dr. DiCarvalho, when someone is dealing with depression and contemplating a suicidal ideation themselves, what are some first steps that they can take when they're feeling absolutely hopeless that there is no hope and it's difficult to identify? And a lot of times the first step with dealing with an issue such as this is identifying the gravity of the situation. What do you find as a psychiatrist when you see patients that are in this step, or more importantly, someone that hasn't come to see a physician or a psychiatrist who is dealing with something like this?
If somebody, you know, when somebody starts to endorse that they're hopeless, you know, that's a pretty strong indicator that the outlook for them, as far as their view of it, is there's nothing's going to change. And if somebody gets to that place where they are completely hopeless, I would say, you know, either reach out. If you have a loved one that you can go to and just talk to, just to support you for that moment, or take yourself to an emergency room. Emergency room staff are trained for that. They will have mental health professionals there that are trained to tease out and evaluate, look, does this person, can we set this person up with a psychiatrist and a therapist so that they can leave here and have a plan the next day or that same day? Or if that person is really not safe and the imminence of danger is so strong, they may need to stay in the hospital and be observed over maybe 3 or 4 days in order for these feelings to pass. And while they do that, they can be going to groups, they can be getting support, family can get involved, we can remove firearms or lethal means from their home so that time period can pass. It's going to be really, really important for that person to do that. You know, you and I spoke earlier, and I was mentioning to you that the majority of people that actually try to end their lives, if they survive that attempt, they're usually grateful that they did. Because what they end up seeing is that they you know, their illusion of hopelessness was not reality. It's almost like a psychotic break at that moment. They are not thinking clearly, and reality is somewhat blurred for them. They're more fused to their feelings and emotions, and their decision-making is dictated by the fusion of feeling and emotion and not reality. And it's difficult for them to do that, especially if they're left alone. The other thing is that when people are at that stage, what we tend to see is the majority of them will actually use some type of substance. They may be drinking, they may be using an opioid or a benzodiazepine, and that's going to blur their ability to kind of deal with reality. So I would say, really, if they don't have a loved one that's right there for them in their home that they could share this hopelessness with, to take themselves to an emergency room and be evaluated. Because, you know, just getting plugged in with a good psychiatrist, a good therapist, where you can learn how to navigate through some of these feelings of hopelessness, worthlessness. You know, when we look at depression, we pretty much use guilt, worthlessness, hopelessness, poor appetite, insomnia. Insomnia, if you miss 2-3 days of sleep and you are not well rested, you could develop psychosis, you could develop suicidal ideations. So there are some things that actually can be treated pretty quickly and get that person out of that type of thinking. So yeah, I would definitely say to be evaluated as soon as possible.
And that's really important. If you're in a situation where you feel that suicide may be your only option, reach out for help. And if you feel you have a loved one that question comes into your mind, talk to them, reach out for help, or be the voice of help for them. Because unfortunately, if you don't, or if they don't, or if the opportunity to help is left untaken, the other side of the fence is unfortunately a fairly drastic alternative. And so even if you have a conversation with someone that may not go the way you want to, you may be surprised that could be the conversation that saves their life or saves your life. And again, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is 1-800-273-8255. Again, that's 1-800-273-8255. If any thoughts of taking your own life or someone that you're worried about, reach out for help or be the voice of help for them.
Very important. And we're going to grab an update from Fox News, get your local forecast for the weekend. We'll be right back with more of the conversation here on News 104.5 WOKV. All right, and we are back with the conversation. I'm Danielle Lee here with Dr. Ali Kazmaryan. As always, you too can join the conversation. Give us a call, 340-1045. And talking to someone is kind of the significant part of our show today.
Well, I mean, when someone today, welcome to the conversation, first of all. Today we're talking about depression, and unfortunately we're having this conversation because in the media over the past few weeks we have been heartbroken with the very public suicides or descriptions of the suicides of Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain, which bring to light the idea of depression being one of the top 10 causes of death in the United States. And unfortunately, it's on the rise. CDC released a study that showed over the past several decades, again, specifically between 1999 and 2016, the rates of suicide in the United States have increased by more than 25%. In women, it's approaching greater than 50% rate of increase versus men is 21%. This is very, very interesting that these trends are emerging. One of the things that's interesting and positive about this is that it allows us to have conversations about mental health, because it's an important conversation for us to have, to realize that this is a disease. This is not something that if you are feeling down, if you're feeling concerned about depression, if you're feeling concerned about suicidal ideation, which means you're having thoughts of taking your own life, that this is a conversation to keep to yourself or not have. This is the time to reach out for help. And that's been an underlying theme of everything that we have discussed today. And so if there's one take-home message from today's show, is that if you are feeling down, if you're feeling depressed, and we'll talk a little bit about what the specific symptoms of depression are, and if you are feeling like your only option is to take your life, talk to someone. Talk to a doctor, talk to a psychiatrist, go to the emergency room, talk to a loved one. If you're worried about that and someone you care about, talk to them. That conversation is less likely to be the cause of them taking their own life, and it may be the thing that actually saves their life. So Dr. DiCarvello, is that a risk worth taking, having that initial conversation?
Absolutely. You know, it's in our age today, with social media, with children really not having these conversations at home, or even people. I mean, we're constantly working, we're constantly on the go, and it's understandable. It's understandable. I would say that, without a doubt, you know, do not be afraid to go up to your child. Do not be afraid to go up to a coworker or somebody who looks like there's something going on in their lives. Talk to them. Be supportive. You know, I mean, I think that is the best way to help provide a way out from this, because time really heals. It helps people get through. It's just as simple as that. And I really, really appreciate you saying that, because just in this conversation today, you could be saving a life right now with somebody listening right now.
Well, we thank both you and Dr. Alloway for being on. Again, this is a sensitive topic, but I think it's a very important and timely topic, and it's an opportunity for someone to use this if they are struggling to reach out for help. And hopefully we can be helpful as a way for people to think about something that they don't want to think about or they haven't thought about, either for themselves or a loved one. So Dr. Alloway, Dr. DiCarvello mentioned social media. So social media can be a double-edged sword. So it's a great way for people to connect. You know, you reach out to people all over the globe that you may not communicate with, you may not reach out with without such technology. However, our perception of what we see can be very, very personalized and individualized to us. And so if someone is depressed or feeling down, I assume that is going to shade the haze with which they see what is being presented to them on social media. And could that be helpful or dangerous?
I think that's a fascinating perspective that you just identified. We know this. There's a Stanford Mood Lab has done a number of studies looking specifically at how we use our thinking, our working memory, to focus on images, on faces, and on words. And we do know that people who have clinical depression tend to fixate longer on negative faces, whether that's anger or sadness, negative images, words like terror, anger, fear, and so on. So it's their brain not only goes there, but it stays there longer as well. And I think that's important to keep in mind when we're looking at something like social media, and you've got this feed coming through, that people who have a tendency for depression or are clinically depressed would be more likely to fixate on those negative posts. Now, it's not all bad. In my own research, I found a lot of positive uses of social media. More recently, we just finished a large-scale study of a few hundred individuals all across the lifespan, and we found that the concept of how connected someone feels, the sense of belongingness, is really cultivates a pro-social type of behavior. Pro-social means that you are more empathetic, you're more likely to reach out, you want to understand what someone else is going through, and we see all of that stemming from an individual feeling connected or a sense of belonging from specific social media connections. Other more psychiatric-based research, just a study came out recently too, when they were looking at young adults or adolescents in psychiatric care, they found that when they were more likely to feel connected on social media, remembering an event that a friend had posted, remembering that, you know, when Facebook pops up and says, hey, it's your friend's birthday, send them a wish, those kinds of ways to stay connected were also more likely to improve their mental health and their outcomes.
So Marcus, one question that to me seems the obvious leap in this situation. So if someone's feeling a situation where they are depressed, down in a situation where, you know, they may not have an underlying diagnosis of depression or mental illness, and they are in a circumstance where they are feeling down and potentially thinking about taking their life, is the connection and sense of belonging or reaching out via a social media platform or another non-face-to-face, non-communicative, in the most classic sense of actually talking to someone or calling them, is it the same? Or can it be dangerous, actually?
Well, if somebody is contemplating suicide and they go on social media and post something that may even be vague, without a doubt, that can actually save that person's life, because that's going to go out to a number of people, and 911 will probably be called, and, you know, somebody will come to the home and can assess the patient. Without a doubt, that's great. But face-to-face contact, where a therapist or somebody who's trained, who can actually show empathy, not sympathy, but empathy, somebody who actually can understand their suffering because they've actually been there too, and be empathetic with the person, that is huge in mental health and one of the foundations of therapy. Because what it does is it creates an alliance between two people, somebody who's there, somebody who cares for you, somebody who's willing to listen, somebody who is committed to get you through and help you navigate through this difficult situation is huge. You know, I am a medical doctor, I'm an MD, and one of the things I do is prescribe medication. But in my training, where I trained in Syracuse, all the physicians, all the MDs that were psychiatrists were grounded in transference-focused psychotherapy or cognitive behavioral therapy, because without a doubt, that's the foundation of mental health. It's about two people in front of each other, a reciprocated relationship where somebody is there for them, that will be there for them, that will not be frazzled by anything they say, to help them. You're not really going to get that via social media. But without a doubt, if somebody is hurting, if somebody is going through something, if somebody is hopeless, feeling guilt, worthlessness, and they're crying out for help, by all means, please post that on the internet, because that will create a sequence of events that can actually save that person's life. But I definitely think that face-to-face contact is essential.
And so to that, what are your thoughts, Tracy?
I think that's absolutely right. If you're looking more from a therapeutic or support, call someone and actually have that face-to-face. My comment on social media was to illustrate how, as a precursor to actually reaching this point of suicidal ideations and so on, is to, you know, you are able to identify and create a sense of connectedness and belonging. But conversely, if you know that you are an individual who has a propensity towards depressive or negative thoughts, turn off those feeds from people who you know are negative. You have an option to say, don't show, whether it's snooze for 30 days or just, you know, unfollow their updates, and make a decision as an individual, just even with that simple step. So while social media is very positive, it's absolutely not a substitute for therapy, as Marcus was mentioning.
So like we talked about, being connected and sense of belonging and reaching out is very, very important. But in terms of social media, could you potentially carve out the environment that you want to set for yourself to be a bit more positive by kind of tweeting out or tweezing out, I guess tweeting out would be appropriate, the more negative influences, so that you can create a more positive perception of what you see by taking out the negative.
And it's time for another break. We're going to be right back with more of the conversation here on News 104.5 WOKV. All right, Aaron, we are back with the conversation. It's our last segment. We got about 4 minutes left. So, I mean, it's a good conversation already. So let's just end it with a high note.
So welcome to the conversation. Today we're talking about depression and the recent study from the CDC showing an increase in the rates of suicide in the United States. And we've been talking about ways of thinking about this process of depression and suicide in ways that hopefully we can understand a little bit better and hopefully reach out and be helpful. One number that we've always kind of been repeating during the show, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 1-800-273-8255, 1-800-273-8255. If you have any thoughts, any questions, any concerns regarding suicidal thoughts, suicidal ideation, depression, reach out. Talk to someone, emergency room, your primary care physician, friends, colleagues, anyone. much better alternative than being silent. At least take a second to have a second thought, a conversation. It may save your life. Our guest today in studio is Dr. Tracy Alloway, a professor of psychology at UNF, an author, good friend to the conversation. And we're thank you for being here with us today. And
thank
Dr.
you.
Marcus DiCarvalho, a psychiatrist who has enlightened us with his perspective on a very difficult topic. So Marcus, one question. So we've talked about, you know, depression through the lifeline from young to adolescent to older. But in terms of how the young mind can deal with all this information and the how to take it in and the possibility of how a young man mind develops and matures in face of 2018 going on 2019, in trying to take information in a place where we're having challenges with how to identify more verbal cues or nonverbal cues and how to communicate. We live in internet. We live on social media. We text all the time. How is this going to affect how children who are growing up are going to be able to deal with the world of depression versus non-depression and how to take in information in a way that they can actually have the ability to cope?
So that's a great question. You know, recently I gave a talk on how we've evolved to think the way we think. And, you know, from a primitive perspective, a caveman, you know, we were a don't get killed machine. That was our goal as cavemen. And we would look at the distance and see somebody coming to our cave and we would think, is that person coming to take our cave or kill us or take our food? I mean, what is that behind that tree? Is that a saber-toothed tiger or a wolf? And so our body developed this fight-or-flight mechanism, which is connected to a structure in our brain called the amygdala. And that amygdala allowed us to survive. You'd walk out the cave. If the tiger was there to eat you, you'd jump back in. But today, in our age today, we still have that fight-or-flight mechanism. We've inherited that system in order to survive. But here's the problem. If you look at it from a primitive perspective, it was important for us to be a part of communities. It was important for us to ask ourselves, do we fit into this community? Am I providing? Am I bringing food? Because if not, if I don't fit in, I'm going to be kicked out of this community. And if I'm kicked out and by myself in the wilderness, I will die. But in our modern society today, we still have to compare ourselves. But what are we comparing ourselves to? Are we comparing ourselves to our villagers and the people that we're focusing on survival? No, we are scrolling through social media, through millions and millions and millions of people, and looking at images, especially young teens, looking at images of things that we're never going to be able to compare to, images that are not really even reality, all these selfies and these photos and these things, or I don't have enough, like this person has a beautiful home or a beautiful car, and we never, ever match up. And what happens there is that will invoke a fight or flight response to where we are not going to invoke, and we become anxious. Our brains start to produce different chemicals. We release cortisol. Our blood pressure goes up. We start to hyperventilate. Now, if you think about a teen, okay, who cannot even negotiate that fight or flight response because they don't even have a fully developed frontal lobe. The frontal lobe of the brain is what actually can look at that fight or flight response and say, hold on here. I'm not in danger of death. This is just something this is an image here. This is not a big deal. I'll be able to navigate through this. And teens don't have that ability. If you post something negative about them on Facebook or you mess up their social network somehow, they can spiral out of control and impulsively end their lives just because of that. Where do teens get their frontal lobes from? From their parents, a mom, a dad, people that are involved in their lives, people that are curious about what's going on, what are they looking at on social media, people that are going to ask them the awkward conversations all the time and not be afraid to have those conversations with them, people that are going to support them. And, you know, being on this radio broadcast today for me is huge because I have four little boys. And I can tell you this, we talk about all these things. I'm constantly talking to them and asking them these questions. They have to know that I will support them and always be there for them. And I really want to encourage parents or loved ones out there of family members to constantly be involved in your kids' lives because they don't have the ability to rationally navigate through what social media will bring to them or just the basic things of life. They need that frontal lobe, and they're going to get it from their parents.
And so that becomes very, very important. Again, boils down to taking care of each other. And again, social media right now is not going away. So like Dr. Alloway mentioned, maybe we can figure out a way to make it work better for us and be a complement, but it's not the sole source of how we communicate and how we learn. It's interesting for babies. You can plant them in front of a screen. You can put them in front of something. That's not how they learn. They learn by the social interaction that surrounds and follows the words that they're hearing. And as adults, I think the emotional aspect of the social communications that we're having, the looks, the feelings, those things are what memories, I think, are shaped by. And hopefully we can potentially get back to a place where we can balance all this in a way that we become a healthier community where we take care of each other, both as individuals and as the people that we love, and hopefully that extends to friends and family. And if there's anything to take away from this show, is have conversations, whether they're human conversations or social media conversations, do them with care and with love, because the words that you choose can potentially be impactful, and hopefully the impact you make is positive.
A very important message. That's all the time we have today. Join us again next week on The Conversation here on News 104.5 WOKV.